And I'm here with Mike Lynn. Mike and I are here representing ourselves. We do have some background information for you. I have over 15 years in operating systems and network experience, as well as 5 years in the security field. Mike is an accomplished C programmer. He's been doing some work in the security field, and he's got a number of years in programming experience. We are here today to talk about the migration pattern of South African swallows. We're here to talk about the advanced 802.11 attacks that we have for you. We noticed that this was supposed to be a demonstration for wireless networks, yet we seem to have quite a lot of wires up here on our table. So we're going for the record on how much equipment you can fit on a banquet table at Black Hat. Talk about first of all that we're not going to cover, so that I apologize for being on one screen. We need to be able to do some demonstration activity on both screens at the same time, so the slides will only be showing up on the right screen. First of all, we're not going to be covering any of the vulnerabilities for the wired equivalent privacy. That's been adequately covered elsewhere. I think it's fairly well known. WAP key cracking techniques. We're going to be talking about any radio signal, radio signal amplification. There's been some talks about using increased signal power to do things to wireless networks, and we won't be talking about that. Suggested changes to the IEEE 802.11b standard. Obviously, some things could happen. We won't be talking about that. Wireless network discovery tools. Lots of great tools out there, and you probably already know about them, or you can read about them. What we're really covering is wireless network best practices and how those relate to practical attacks. And specifically, we're going to look at the focus of how these attacks. The focus of these attacks and what weaknesses we're exploiting and the layers of the network model. And the toolbox that goes along with it, we have some drivers, utilities, proof of concept code, as well as attack scenarios. We're going to be looking at the weaknesses for denial of service attack, detecting mass DSS IDs, and some more complex attacks that involve man in the middle, or in the gender neutral term, monkey in the middle attacks, and what to do as far as trying to use VPN implementations to overcome these weaknesses. Wireless best practices, I would say a lot of people, some people say you still should enable that, some say no. It's not an end-all to securing your wireless network. It does give you a certain level of challenge to a would-be attacker. Disabling of the broadcast DSS ID. These are all well known. I probably don't need to spend too much time on the best practices. You want to restrict access to the infrastructure by MAC address. Of course, no one of these is foolproof. None of them are foolproof. And you should be looking at a VPN technology to try to protect the data that's going over a wireless network. And if you're going to use VPN technology, you want to seriously consider strong mutual authentication. Now, maybe a little bit of background. Mike and I, we've been doing research on the security of wireless networks basically independently over the past year. And we discovered a lot of things. It's been kind of a organic process. So it's been difficult to take an organic process which doesn't really have a clear set of controls and convert it into a coherent presentation. So hopefully what we can do is take you from where we started to the end of the presentation. That will draw you kind of through the steps in building up to the more complex attacks that we're going to be talking about. At this point, it looks like we have sufficient amount of time that if I if I take a leap somewhere and don't explain something you'd like a little bit more detail, please go ahead and raise your hand, and I'll try to answer the question, or Mike. And if we start running short of time, then we'll have to wait to the end for the questions. Starting with practical attacks, and how they relate back, I guess, to the best practices I just went over. Wired equivalent privacy, everybody knows web can be cracked passively, and basically that activity is not really detectable. Masked ESSID, it can be observed. It's passively transmitted when stations associate with their access points. And the blocking of null SSID connects has the same problem, since people can observe the SSID transmission and the probe requests and responses. If you install VPN, it's good to go with the additional layers of security. However, if it's a weakly authenticated VPN, you'll be susceptible to an active man-in-the-middle attack at the 802.11 layer. And ultimately, you want to use strong mutual authentication. Really haven't come up with anything yet for that.
Yeah, I do.
So, a quick review. You get a bunch of layers, OSI model. We're looking down at the bottom two layers, physical layer and the data link layer.
Yeah, we're when we see a lot of these attacks, we've heard a lot of people discussing things like having to use radio amplification or different antennas to do some of these attacks, or denial of service attack using, I don't know, a cordless phone. But just keep in mind, this is all at the protocol layers. Well, one to a degree, and two, nothing above that either. No ARP tricks or anything like that, so nothing up our sleeves.
So we're looking at the bottom two layers, data link layer and the physical layer. Data link layer, quick review, is responsible for the controlling access to the medium itself, and logical link control for synchronization and flow. And physical layers down at the very bottom, your radio spectrum bit sequence. And this is a great diagram I came up with myself. And you can see where the layers fit together. This is what we're looking at. This is where we're focusing everything that we're doing today. This incidentally fits in well. If any of you were in the discussion this morning with Mike Schiffman, fits in very well with what he was talking about, and that is that you can do things with management frames, and the management frames can control the physical aspects of the medium. In other words, it can affect the activity or the actual configuration of the medium. And 802.11b frames, there is currently no authentication, so that's what leaves it open. And I don't want to go too far into that because Mike covered it. The toolbox we're going to talk about, these are not really made to be general tools. These are specifically proof of concept. Initially what we found was the problem with attempting to go with the encode the theoretical attacks is that we could not get adequate control over the wireless card because of the way the drivers and for the card and the firmware were interacting. So the approach we took was to put in a replacement driver for the card that was designed specifically for the types of attacks that were theoretical that we wanted to try. And then we also had, since we're doing the attacks with a single laptop and two wireless cards, we had to make some modifications to the Linux Arnoco Lucent driver so that we could set the MAC address for that device on the fly. And then on top of that were the user utilities, or I should say user space programs, not user utilities, to prove the concepts and demonstrate them for you. The driver that we have, do you want to talk about the drivers?
Okay, we first actually started out about a year ago modifying a number of drivers, the Lucent driver for Linux and the Prism 2 driver, the WLAN and G drivers, and found that while it was they were really just geared too much towards using them to connect to networks instead of breaking them. We've remedied that, so that's what this driver aims to do. If you were in Mike Shipman's talk, he was discussing how they were having problems. His wasn't a driver level issue, and he was discussing how one of his frustrations was with the driver issue that some other people had made, and that it doesn't give you as much control over how it works. That's because the firmware tries to help you by conforming to the spec, and a lot of times we don't want to, and by doing, you know, pesky things like sending out beacons sometimes we don't feel like it.
Well, what we found was that we worked with the Prism 2 card, and we started with the documented modes that are available for that card. And in the process of running tests on that card, we found that there are a number of other modes that are actually useful for use with the driver. Excuse me. Specifically, the was it mode 5?
Yeah.
The mode 5 that we can't. Well, we say it's undocumented because we couldn't find any documentation.
We don't have a non-disclosure agreement with Intersil, though. So I mean, someone might have it documented, just not us.
It allows to do channel selection. The firmware still handles the time-sensitive functions, and it's fairly silent as far as whether or not it sends beacons, and the firmware doesn't interfere with the activities of the driver. And then, are we using mode 6? You want to talk about mode 6?
Yeah, actually. Mode 6 is the other one. It's what you saw him do his attack this morning with. Mode 6 is the host AP driver mode. It's the same mode that they use in the host AP drivers, if you've seen that, for Linux. That's actually a pretty good mode in the card, in that the problem with using some of the other things with the driver is that it doesn't handle, it'll either handle everything for you, which we don't want, or it'll handle not enough for you. In other words, we can't handle things like timing sensitive issues like frame acknowledgement. The firmware simply just won't let you, as far as I know. Anyways, it won't send out beacons at the appropriate intervals, because really when you send something to a card, it's more like a request, not a demand. But there are various modes in there where you can just trick it into doing things. Part of the driver that I wrote is to push all the control of the modes that the card operates in into user space so that, well, we don't have to kernel panic every time we feel like changing something, because I don't like to change kernel code often.
And then we also handle Prism 2 monitor mode like the existing Prism 2 drivers.
Yeah.
And our interface is the PF packet interface for receiving and transmitting of raw frames.
Yeah, that's actually a little different than what you've seen in one of the other things, having to run something across a Netlink socket, which is sort of a bastardization of that API. I don't know how many of you are coders, but any of you, if you've ever written code to do direct link layer stuff for Ethernet, and you open up a PF packet socket under Linux and you just write the raw Ethernet headers, the interface is very, very similar, if not the same. There are a few limitations that the firmware is not going to help me actually get around. I can cover those.
Okay, we need to find out how many C programmers are here today.
Okay, it's a lot. Right. I'll try not to bore the rest
now
of you.
Now you can explain this code snippet so that...
Okay.
So this is a call to the AirJack driver. It's an example of a call.
All right, the code snippet assumes that we already have a PF packet socket opened and bound to the interface. That struct there, which is in a header file that comes with the stuff, that's just the IEEE 802.11 header that has three addresses since the A3, because I can't start the structure with a number. So that just sets up the fields inside the header, and then we call the send syscall, driver sent, or packet sent rather. That's a deauth frame, and we're going to see some fun with deauth frames in a little bit.
All right, well, we've got to talk about the first part. It was theorized some time ago that at the 802.11 layer, you could send the deauthentication frames, which is a frame that is used for usually by access points for controlling connection to the wireless infrastructure. And all of what we're going to be talking about today is really in the mode of a typical deployment where you have a wireless infrastructure, you've deployed access points, and then you have client machines, typically laptops or other mobile devices that are using that infrastructure. First one, we give everything names. I don't know why. When you stay up late working on things, you get punchy. And so we have all of our names end in Jack. And don't ask me why, because I don't remember.
You had to be there.
It'll do what we're looking at is sending the authentication frames as if we were the access point. And we send those, the authentication frames, to the MAC broadcast address.
Well, you could also send it out to a specific address, but, well, you get more bang for your buck if you send it to everybody at once. So that's what we're going to do.
And as long as those, frames are still being sent, there's really no way to re-authenticate to the access point.
Occasionally, depending on some conditions, some cards can get on faster.
Now,
they'll slip maybe a few frames through sometimes. It really depends on how fast you send out the authentication frames, because they're pretty resilient that they get back on real fast. Sending out fashion beacons, they're not getting back on.
Overall, this is not an original idea. The idea was to prove that it can be done.
Yeah.
And what we've done, also found in some of our research, is there's people that are writing their own code and have already done this.
Yeah.
So if you're looking in terms of considering this a threat to a wireless infrastructure, then you would want to be looking at putting tools in place to monitor for this type of activity.
Yeah.
And if in the process of doing that, you can use this to generate the traffic.
Okay. So we're
ready for a demo?
Yeah.
Yeah,
we're good. Okay.
Let me see if this comes up.
Mike Shipman did a similar attack this morning. We're going to do it on a private wireless network here. He was having problems that there's so many access points here that, well, you guys got kicked off, but you didn't notice because it got on another access point. It couldn't be on two channels at once. So we're just going to do it on our own. So,
well, what we're using here for the demonstration, first of all, everything we're demonstrating today is not specific to any vendor or any software.
Yeah.
It's just to demonstrate the weaknesses and how those can be exploited, and the fact that situation needs to be monitored. Until the future deployments and standards have changed to correct the situation. So right here we're showing you the Cisco client utility for monitoring your wireless connection. And currently it's connected to our private access point, and it's showing that it has good signal strength.
Okay.
And what?
Yeah.
Yeah. So do you want to run it from there?
Yeah. Okay, what I'm about to run is a WLAN jack. Keep in mind, this is a sort of a live test, and there's a lot of wireless equipment here, so just give me a second. I might have to roll back up the hill again for any of these different things, but this one should work out just fine. Oh, hold on.
Yeah,
I'm sorry about that.
Slow down.
Okay. What I'm about to do here, if you didn't hear, I'm about to actually run WLAN jack. What it's doing is it's sending out de-authentication frames. I don't know how much you know about Data 211, but you have to first authenticate that to get on even an ad hoc or an infrastructure network. Then you have to associate. If you get de-authenticated, you have to do both again. You can't send out data frames, and you can't be associated until you're authenticated. So you're going to have to do both once we do this. And hopefully it won't do it fast enough to go back on. There you go.
Okay, so that's what it looks like after the being de-authenticated. And we'll stay that way
pretty much until
the program stops.
The program stops, so there you go. And I stopped the program. There you go.
Takes a minute to come back.
Hey, it's a DOS attack. If he never comes back on, I'll...
Okay. This is just a screenshot. Is any of that readable? No?
Okay. Well, pretend that it had the same command line that I just typed in.
We
only have two projections.
So you have the ability to follow along with any wireless sniffer. We were on channel one, and you would have seen something like this is a screenshot of Aeropeak, and it's showing the deauthentication frames, or more specifically, we have circled those. I can't tell if that's readable.
Yeah. As you can see, it's not like a ping flood or anything. This DOS attack really doesn't take much traffic. For example, one frame to broadcast for this will kick off everyone on that BSS or that access point until they get reassociated. And the reassociating can happen very quickly, but we don't have to send out very many frames to make sure it doesn't. So,
then if you like looking at bits and bytes, we have a full decode of the deauth. It appears to have come from a legitimate access point. This one that we showed in the demonstration was sent to the broadcast address so that everybody on that access point has been deauthenticated. And drive the point home, this is your connection, and this is your connection on WLAN jack.
Yeah. Any questions?
<Just kidding. laughs> Next, we look at ESSID jack. Question for you. If you set up a wireless network, do you think that your SSID is a secret? My contention is no, even if you're not sending it, it is still not a secret because of the fact that when legitimate stations associate with your access points, they will send the ESSID in their probe requests.
Okay.
Also, so you, not only will that happen, but if you, if you combine the concept of WLAN jack, which is to send a DAuth frame to knock somebody off of an access point, you'll find that if you just send a couple of DAuth frames, that the stations will immediately attempt to re-authenticate with the access point. Now, when that happens, when they go to re-authenticate with the access point, they have to send the ESSID in the probe request. So what WLAN jack does is it actually sends the DAuth and then listens for the probe request and pulls the ESSID out of the air.
Yeah. Basically, we'd seen a whole lot of talk about how a...
Is that one come up? Is there anything on this screen?
Yeah.
Can you guys actually see that up there? Okay. We heard a whole lot of talk about people. We even saw on some open source project an ESSID brute forcer. Truth is, it's a network identifier. It's called the extended service set identifier. It's no more password than a MAC address. It's really just to identify the network. You can mask them and not allow nulls to let people not come in. And I'm not saying it's a bad idea to mask it. It's actually a good idea because some tools like NetStumbler won't catch it. But don't count on that for security. And I'm actually right now. If you have the error peak or something, you're listening. We do have a masked SSID on the Cisco access point up here. And what I'm going to do here is this is going to send out a deauthentication frame to broadcast with that BSSID using the AirJack drivers. Then what we're going to do is we're going to listen for people getting back on. When they get back on, they're going to have to send out a probe request. Probe request is going to have to contain the SSID, or they're not going to get back on. So when they do that, if everything goes to plan, hopefully you'll see it. So, okay. There you go. That's how much of a password it is. So. I don't know if you can actually see that. Okay. Better? Okay. There you go. Push enter, you had it. It's not something you need to sit there and brute force. It's not really an authentication mechanism. It's just a bit of obfuscation. A bit of obfuscation does go a long way, but not against someone who really knows what they're doing. So. That's more fun with the deauthentication frame. Actually, I think a little bit more fun than a DOS attack. Cause
so if a person were running a sniffer, they would see something similar to what's over on this screen, which is you'll see a probe response. I'm sorry, what I have highlighted. Probe response coming from the access point with the SSID in it. I circled the important parts. So it's the John Madden technique of presentation.
Oh, yeah. As you can see, it was all over there. I mean, all we needed to see was one of those, and that was just me running the program and sending out two deauthentication frames to broadcast. That was with one client on there, and it's even worse when you have everybody on there. So,
okay, now we're moving fairly quickly. So at this point, I want to reiterate the fact that the following attacks that from the first two that we've done are building on top of the first two. So if we've totally lost you and we haven't done a good job of explaining what's going on. Right now would be a good time to ask a question.
It's only going to get worse if you're lost, and it's not as complicated as it might sound. So if you have a question, these slides. Oh, about the slides. Terribly sorry that they're a lot more and different than the ones you guys have.
Yeah, I should have explained that from the beginning.
Yeah,
the current slides will be available from. From the black
it's sort of a superset of the ones you guys have. You guys have more of an outline. It just occurred to us that wasn't probably enough by the time we...
Well, again, like I said, it's because it's an organic process, it's been changing daily to reach this point.
But I am sorry if it's making it difficult to follow along, so feel free to abuse us. And pardon me? Yes, absolutely. We'll put them up on the Black Hat page and also on private page.
Yeah, we have a URL at the end.
Yeah, so no worries about that. Sorry, could you repeat that? Yes. As far as the DOS attack, maybe. As far as the rest of it, yes. It's straight up proof of concept. Sort of a dilemma we have about the DOS attack, but people should definitely know it's doable, but I don't necessarily want to be kidding around the block, taking off your network. The majority, besides that, will definitely be, they're actually GPL'd, the drivers are all open source, and they'll be available on the Black Hat webpage and on a private webpage.
I think it's on the CD.
Yeah, okay, the thing about the CD, there's a very clever typo in your driver. It'll send about 3 frames and then stop. So you're going to want to get the one off the, I transpose 2 fields because I'm really clever that way. And so we did an acknowledge and interrupt. And cards sort of don't like continuing to send interrupts once they are waiting for you to acknowledge old ones. So it works for like half a second, and then it doesn't. So you want to get the ones off the Black Hat page. They're not very different. It's basically a fix of that typo, and I apologize for that. Also, we'll also be putting the modified Lucent drivers, which don't have anything serious. It just allows you to change the MAC address. Another thing actually, well, I'll cover that later. Go ahead.
Yeah. So the next level we went to is, okay, we noticed that a lot of VPN solutions that are used to secure networks are really geared towards more stopping passive eavesdropping of the data, and are somewhat weak or is possibly implemented with the assumption that the bottom layers are secure. And so the question came to mind now, knowing that we can generate management frames, is it possible to do a monkey in the middle attack at layer 1 and 2? Initially, you would think maybe not, because it's all the same airspace, and you can't really own the airspace without overpowering the other stations.
It's a broadcast medium.
But we kind of found that we found it out, and so that's what we're going to cover now in Monkey Jack. We're going to show inserting an attack machine between the victim and an access point. Using management frames, we could de-authenticate the victim from a real access point. And interesting, what happens at that point when the station is de-authenticated, it will begin looking for another access point. If you monitor the connectivity of the client, you'll see it changing channels looking for another access point. So it's the channel changing aspect of the behavior, the channel changing behavior of the client that allows us to end up becoming inserted in the middle.
I mean, a thing that's important to remember that a lot of people overlook, it's not exactly like a wired network in that we have one wire. You have to think of it as 14 wired networks that it could potentially plug in on, and the firmware is going to do it for you. And it's usually not going to tell you about it. In this country, it's 11, but because there's different channels, you can think of those as being separate wires that it could plug into. So it's not exactly the same as a wired man-in-the-middle attack, but we're most definitely fully inserted at layer 1.
So going through the steps that Monkey Jack does, once the victim's been de-authenticated, he starts scanning the channels and looking for another access point. What we do is we have a card sitting on another channel that's basically a fake access point. So it's being, I'm sorry?
So when it sees an access point disappear, it doesn't try on that same channel, it immediately goes to a different channel.
What he asked was if it sees the access point disappear, it doesn't look for it on the same channel, it moves to another. Actually, to answer that question, it doesn't think the access point disappeared. What we're going to do, and every card takes a little bit of a different dance to get it to switch. They will all do it. What you have to do is you deauthenticate and disassociate them. Different cards will give up at a different point. We chose Cisco because it's pretty reliable. Actually, and there's a timing issue. It took the longest to kick off, and I have to switch channels on something. But it'll work against all the cards, and it doesn't think the access point disappeared. It thinks the access point told them to go away.
Yeah, so we're not blocking the signal from the legitimate access point. We're spoofing management frames to appear to have come from the legitimate access point, telling the card to go away. And if the cards receive enough of those, they start scanning for a different access point.
So your Lucky Jack has that in it to make it to look for another point?
Yeah, actually, WLAN Jack will do that too. But the trick with Monkey Jack is we're there when they're looking for somebody else. It takes two cards. One of them is actually going, this is the timing issue I discussed, is actually going to kick them off. It's going to send off enough that they think the access point doesn't want them around anymore. And then once it goes looking, it is going to find us.
If you look at it in a normal infrastructure, if for some reason the card is deauthenticated from, or even if there's interference, what will happen is the card will kick off, click through the channels, and often, if there's only one access point, come back around and reassociate with the access point that it was on. So all we're doing is we're being in one of the higher channels. It'll hit a fake access point on a higher channel before it wraps back around to the real access point.
Okay. Yeah, and another thing that is important to note is usually when it's connecting back up to another access point, it tends to favor the exact same access point it was on. So we're going to oblige it, sort of, as far as it's concerned.
The fake access point that we're using, well, it's not really an access point. It's just a wireless card that's acting like an access point. We'll be using the same MAC address of the real access point.
Same MAC address and the same SSID. So if you actually do look at it, there are a few noticeable differences. They're noticeable to us if we're looking in Arapeak, but that's simply because, well, I wasn't trying to make a polished attack code. I was trying to demonstrate the vulnerability. It is enough that the card doesn't notice that there's a difference. Main difference there is this is being done on a Prism 2 card, the AirJack drivers are, and it sends out some Prism 2 specific information about its card name, which I didn't bother to say.
Another thing to consider is that what we're doing here is a controlled environment. We set up the network, we set up the access point, we set up the victim and the attack machines. In a real world scenario, one would have to gather all that information needed to implement this type of an attack, the MAC addresses, the SSIDs, everything. We've boiled it down to just a fairly simple approach for the purpose of demonstrating it.
Gathering that information is really not that difficult. He asked about how long it takes to gather the information. Well, some of the things we do to gather information is obviously like the ESSID jack will do that.
It'll get the SSID. Depends on the discovery tools you have available to you.
Arapeak is very good.
You have a wireless sniffer or NetStumbler or whatever.
If not, the AirJack drivers will use a standard PF packet interface. That means TCP dump works. Unfortunately, TCP dump doesn't know what 802.11 looks like, but if you're like me and you look at 802.11 enough, it's good enough, but most people don't like hex dumps. Ethereal is pretty good at that too. Essentially, you just need to know, for Monkey Jack, you need to know the victim's MAC address. You need to know the MAC address of the access point, and you need to know the SSID and various channels that you're going to be on. So basically, you need to do things like NetStumbler, Kismet, discover who the actual victims of the attack are going to be, and then a bit of passive monitoring.
What we're doing is we're duplicating two MAC addresses. We're actually duplicating the MAC address of the victim when we attach to the real AP, and we're duplicating the MAC address of the access point when we have the victim roll over to another channel and connect to our fake access point. At that point, the attack machine is fully inserted in the bottom layer of your protocol stack, and it's pretty much at that point transparent to the upper level protocols in that it's passing raw, we can pass raw frames through. Now, obviously, depending upon what's going on at the upper level protocols, if you attempt to change any of the information passing through, you may or may not be noticed at that point. Again, this is the scenario. You've got two people connected to an access point, and then you run the attack, and now you have victims. Connection is effectively going through the attack machine. The attack machine is connected to the infrastructure. Now, let me see what we're going to do on the the demonstration, if you look at the screen currently, it shows that the Cisco client utility, maybe I'll show, the channel too.
Yeah, hold on, I'm going to clear this out of the way in a second. I can't be heard. Yeah, wires. Okay, I'm going to clear this out of the way in a second. I just want to show the ping. Hopefully this will all go to plan. Like I said, there is the variable of lots of other wireless equipment here, which more than anything else causes a timing issue with a Lucent card. The Lucent card is not like the AirJack driver. I don't have as much control over that firmware as I have sort of commanded over the Prism 2 stuff. So occasionally it will just sort of on its whim decide that it feels like it doesn't like the current access point. Since there's one, essentially the Prism 2 guard underneath it, very, very close, it decides to stop and try and associate to that. That doesn't usually happen, but it's just a disclaimer. So, okay. Right now we're not doing, this is just a normal ping going. And wait, that's Windows, isn't it? That's better. All right, so we're pinging this other machine here. And, all right,
go ahead.
Actually, hold on. All right, as we do this, sometimes this happens with little interchange. You can't actually see it. How well can you guys see the fields on the screen over here? You can't see them at all? Can you guys see them at all? It's sort of a problem with a split screen, but it's difficult.
Just verbalize what's going on.
Okay. Well, basically, let's sort of lose some of the dramatic effect, but that's trust me. Right now, you see the SSID is leprous there. The MAC address, it's a Cisco MAC address, 004096, yada, yada, yada. Sometimes it happens quick enough that the bars for the status there, you don't even see change. So
it also shows that it's on channel 1.
Yeah, right now. That's the most important thing. It is on channel 1, and we only have that access point on channel 1. It's not going to change. Okay, so here we go. Okay.
If you look,
I'm not sure if you noticed, but you see the channel there? It's 8. Well, you have to take my word for it, but the channel is 8. The ping is still going. The ping is going through me right here, not through there. So you are now connected from here to there via the different channels. So we have effectively put ourselves in the middle of the situation. And we didn't have to hack any machine to do it. It was actually pretty easy, and there's not much you could do about it. The actual amount of time, you see there was all of one ping that timed out. Sometimes, usually, there's not any. The attack we're going to do here in a few seconds is, it takes a little bit longer because, well, there's some authentication handshakes we have to deal with. But
all right, well, I'd like to go at this point, introduce another stopping point. Again, the next attack is going to build on top of this one. So we're going to take a quick stop here if you have any questions about what we just did with a wireless man-in-the-middle insertion.
Quick question about one attack. What do you have built into that to show you what
attack
will buy or switch
the screen to
that system?
Pardon me?
You switch the screen
to
the system that the running
button
jack on?
No, you want me to, okay, here. Sure. We have, too many laptops, too many wires. But can you see that?
He wants to. He's talking about seeing the traffic pass.
Try highlighting it from this side, try highlighting it from that side.
We can't see it.
Okay.
Highlight it.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah.
Okay, but he's talking about seeing the traffic pass through, though.
Okay. Seeing the traffic pass through, that's nothing special yet because it wasn't encrypted. We could. I can actually show you if you like. We still inserted?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Actually, if you just saw that, it said reassociating Lucent card. That's what I mean by occasionally we'll just decide to get on another access point. Still on channel 8? Okay. I have to go elsewhere, but here we go.
We'll reverse video as soon as we get some output. Go ahead. Let's do his TCP dump and we'll highlight it after. Okay, stop.
Okay.
All right, that is the output from AirJack. As I said, TCP dump doesn't really know 802.11. Second, I'll get you the output actually just from the Lucent card. The Lucent card will look a little more meaningful because right now that's using, well, as far as the rest of the kernel is concerned, it's an Ethernet card. So here, I'll show you that.
In other words, the machine that's inserted is not using an IP stack. It's passing the raw frames.
Okay, that's the traffic going through right there. Well, actually, you guys can't. Hold on. Again, I apologize for it being so difficult to see. That's running through here. You do actually have some issues in that there's a whole lot of radio interference going on right here because I have an access point right on top of a client in the same one PCMCA slot above the other. So it tends to not send as fast. If there's one thing you notice when you're in there, yeah, that would solve most of the problem. We just didn't have that here. Like I said, it's not something you can't get around. But one of the things you will notice is occasionally you'll send out a lot of frames, more frames at 2 megabits a second than you will to the others. But that's mostly just an interference issue. It's not that big a hurdle. But
okay, next. I'm sorry. Go ahead. We're doing that because we set up this network.
Yeah.
What we're saying is that there's other tools out there, there's other discovery tools out there that.
I'd have to know. But to get the SSID, yes, I could get that off of there. Problem is, there's a timing issue involved. I have to actually, because of the configuration, you can make it work a whole lot better, actually, if you have three cards.
I think he's talking about tying, like, ESSID jack and monkey jack.
Are you talking about just having one automated tool to do everything?
Pretty much.
Yeah. We don't have one automated tool to do everything, because mostly it was proof of concept, trying to get everything done here. It's not that difficult to continue.
They should still be on the channel that the real AP is on.
The question he asks is if everybody, does it cause problems because I have the same MAC address and SSID as the real access point, do they all try to connect? In truth, if they're already on, they don't get kicked off because I actually do send only the DOS text to one client. You will, in fact, have other clients try and connect, but it will filter out and basically just ignore them. It will send responses because the firmware handles that, but it will never actually respond to any of their authentication or association requests. Given about half a second, those cards will get the hint and go back to the original channel. So we're filtering for the one guy. There is another limitation in that if he does actually get disassociated in the middle of the process, there's a bit of a timing issue there. It can go through and redo it. It's just not very good at it because that's not really what the focus of this was. Like I said, these aren't exactly polished attack tools, but they get the point across, I think.
Are the frames being copied from one network to the other by MonkeyJack or by some other
tool? MonkeyJack is actually what's copying the frames. It's right now doing nothing but checking off. Since the Lucent driver actually wants an Ethernet 2 header on it, all it's doing is stripping off the 802.11 header, interpreting the fields, and then putting on an Ethernet 2 header for it, and then sending it off to the rest of the driver. The only difference is I have a stage in here when I have to change the MAC address on the Lucent card, and that was the only to match that of the victims. And then the Lucent card goes and associates with a real access point. So that all is pretty straightforward. There's no actual IP stack involved with this, so. That's why we didn't have some very, very elaborate things.
Is there any implication on that? You're all doing this in infrastructure mode right now. Is there
back or, you know, point to point ad hoc mode and stuff, which you could, other than just getting rid of those, you know, actually redirecting?
Conceivably, but I really haven't tried enough to really say. A lot of the same concepts are similar. I believe the card will try and check on another channel when it's in ad hoc mode, but not with enough certainty to tell you for sure. I haven't actually tried targeting that.
Okay, before we take it up a notch, any more questions?
Yeah.
So once we decided we could insert in the lower layers, we then looked at the theory of, okay, we can protect a wireless network with VPN technology. So we started looking at what was out there for VPN technology and how those are typically being implemented. And we kind of want to address that situation, and that's really what we're leading up to as far as what you want to be looking at for securing a wireless network, and that if you believe it's secured by by VPN technology, then you should be using some, make sure you're using some strong authentication.
The same also actually goes for SSL in many cases. You've seen DSNF. Well, we don't have something for SSL to show you, but it is the exact same issue. As much as you have, even if you have certificates there, as much as we'd like to think most of our users would know to not click OK, that's fine that they aren't who they say they are, they'll click it. And DSNF has pretty much shown that. And if you don't have certs and you're just using SSL, then there's not terribly much you can do.
So we decided to go move forward and try to identify a type of man-in-the-middle attack that would have an effect on a VPN solution. What we ended up choosing was some open source software called WaveSec. Again, this is not specific to WaveSec. We merely chose something that was freely available that we could download, build, and install. It's based on free SWAN. It works very well, and it thwarts passive eavesdropping of wireless networks. It also has implementation options for strong authentication, like certificates and secure DNS.
They're not the default, though. But yeah.
But for the purpose of our project, we did not implement the strong authentication.
We went with the defaults, which is, you know, incidentally, WaveSec is a VPN solution that's meant to be geared towards wireless networks. That's the other reason why we went towards that.
So, it's typically used at conferences
They used it at OLS, if anybody was at that. I think that's what they were using at OLS this year.
So, again, being more of an organic process, we implemented WaveSec and observed how it authenticates and how it sets up the IPsec VPN tunnel. Basically, you've got a WaveSec server. It's connected. The access point is connected to that, and then the WaveSec server provides a gateway access to either the rest of the network or the internet. The client, typically a laptop machine, has a customized, and this is all done on Linux-based machines, because that's what the code was immediately available for. It sends a modified DHCP request to the WaveSec server and includes its public key. The WaveSec server stores that public key into the DNS record of a DNS server so that other people have access to the public keys. The client obtains the WaveSec. I'm just reading the slides. I'm sorry. I told myself I wasn't going to read the slides, and I'm reading them. I'm taking you through the steps for authenticating on an IPsec.
With Wavelength.
With WaveSec.
Or WaveSec, rather. So basically, they're using the DNS server to exchange the keys. The fundamental problem was how they actually get them in there. It's sort of assumed that, well, if you're on a wired network, this scheme wouldn't necessarily be such a bad idea. I don't know. I mean, still leave me a bit uneasy, but I can't immediately come up with half a dozen ways to stop it if we can't actually get in the middle. We can, though. So
then the client gets the WaveSec, the public key for the WaveSec server via a DNS request. And at that point, the IPsec tunnel is set up and secured from passive eavesdropping. Using CrackerJack, we go ahead and we do an insert. We insert layer 1 and 2 like we did with Monkey Jack. And at that point, we start intercepting the traffic in that IPsec tunnel. Obviously, we cannot alter it, the traffic that's in that IPsec tunnel. However, what we did find, at least with the way that we have it implemented, and again, when it comes to implementation, there's a lot of ways to implement. So we took what we could tell at best was the instructions for setting up the WaveSec gateway.
It actually took us a little bit longer to set that up than it did to break it because of the documentation. But
so we go ahead and we insert, and what we were able to do was basically force both ends of the connection to initiate new VPN tunnels. In the process of doing that, once we're in the middle, we go ahead and we tell the WaveSec server via our own DHCP request, now we have the MAC address of the victim, and we are acting as the victim. We give the WaveSec server a new key to put in the DNS server. And then when via DHCP, I'm sorry.
Clear as to how
at this point, I'm not sure it makes any sense.
Okay, did we really just make that clear how that works? I don't want to go on if we haven't.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
Give me a second.
First,
DHCP is
the yes.
Okay, I think actually FreeSWAN only supports main mode, it doesn't do aggressive mode. But again, aggressive mode, I can't see how it would be any better. It would be main mode stronger, if anything. But I mean, I'm not an IPsec expert, I don't claim to be. But.
Question. Would this attack only be useful on the initial association with the client when they initially exchange keys? Or is this something that can be done after the client is already associated and exchanged keys?
Both. I'm sure that it could be set up. I haven't seen it set up that way, and I haven't seen the code to do it, to actually keep keys the same way SSH does. In reality, though, anytime we send a DHCP request, it's going to blow out their key inside the DNS server. What they're really doing is it's active DNS, and so it's allowing the DHCP server to have access to update the DNS server. But it's really not caching anything. That would be one way that you could sort of mitigate the attack, but... again, we're not really trying to pick on any one particular implementation. We're just sort of trying to get the point across. Because just the little trick where the pings kept going by when he was asking, well, can you see the traffic? Well, yeah, we could see the traffic before, so that's not anything special. So we wanted to just sort of drive that home.
That's
right. DHCP said it's not working.
Is it right?
I don't ask questions or something.
The DHCP server.
You have to give me a second because the DHCP server is flaking out on me. So because it's a bad time for it to. So ask him questions.
I'll keep going with the explanation. So basically, we get in the middle of the key exchange. The client now has a new key for the server, which is ours, because at the time that we force a rebuild of the main mode tunnel, it will make a DNS request that we intercept, and we give the client our key, or the attacker's key. So we build up a security association between the attacking machine and the WaveSec server, and the attacking machine and the client. At that point, we're able to pass the traffic through unencrypted. I'm not sure how you want to explain how you're repacking. And
if you want DHCP, so it'll work.
Okay.
Actually, you know, I'm going to take the Windows solution. I'm going to reboot it.
Did you check to see if it was running?
Oh, hey, that's a good idea. You're smart.
I'm sorry.
That's the end.
Okay. I'm sorry. It's happening at the wrong time. It worked like 10 minutes before the presentation. Not the attack. I'm just trying to make the network work. So I'm taking the Windows solution and rebooting at the moment. So it should, in theory, come all back up. While it's doing that. No, we have not. It's not, the particular code will only function on this, and it's actually not very polished attack code. It's not terribly meant for that. We're just wanting to demonstrate the issue. In other words, like for example, it's only going to go until the key expires, and I don't have any code in there to renegotiate the key, nor do I terribly care to write that because I was not really writing tools for you to run around breaking this. I'm writing tools so we can see that someone who has a lot more free time than me does go run around breaking this. Pardon me? Yeah, it would in fact manage its own renegotiation, but the problem is if it's going through me. It's not passively going, it's not... Yes, in effect I have a tunnel from this attack machine to the server, and then a tunnel from the attack machine back to the victim. And so I would in fact have to have the code on here to do that. It's not done on any IP layer, so I don't actually have... The IPsec implementation was written on here. Yeah, it's essentially a standard IPsec tunnel. Not on this end because I wrote them all. I don't have an IP stack. It's all done at layer 2 and 3. Yes?
But once you're there, you can stay there.
Yeah, once I'm there, I can stay there. Now, it's not a limitation that you can't do it. I'm simply saying I wasn't terribly wanting to make a tool that you could use to hack people. So about 3 minutes after you make the key, it's going to expire. If you wrote code to re-exchange a key, you have all the keying material to do this. It's not an authentication problem. Okay, hold on.
Are we not up?
Yeah, he has to be 119.
But he needs to get my computers first. Seriously. You got it. There we go. All right. What? No. That's wrong. Talk to them. Where else? Say something.
To say. Well, all right. Getting more of the details of the actual key exchange. If you're familiar with Ike, ASA, KMP, and Oakley, you know that messages 1 and 2 are initially set up in a negotiation for the security, and there is no authentication. Messages 3 and 4, they do a lot of the magic, random values, nonces, execute Diffie-Hellman, set up your master key, and there's no authentication at messages 3 and 4. Messages 5 and 6, that finishes it off.
So apparently if you plug the wrong interfaces into the wrong sides, it doesn't work properly. Networks are really finicky in that they want to be plugged into the right one. I don't know, this wired thing. It will take a few seconds for it to actually start the tunnel. Don't ask, I didn't write that code. Okay, and even though it says it's there, hold on. I suppose, let me make sure it's there. All right. So, I suppose I'll just do it.
Oh, well, one of the things you should know. What it's going to do is it's going to copy, once it decrypts the stuff in the middle of the tunnel, I'm going to duplicate the unencrypted stuff. I'm going to slap basically a bogus Ethernet 2 header on it, and I'm going to dump it to loopback because I didn't feel like rewriting Ethereal, so we can look at it real pretty in Ethereal. So that'll be the unencrypted traffic. The encrypted traffic then we can either see on the other interface of this card, or I guess I can plug it into another laptop. This one is actually pretty timing sensitive. If the card, if the Lucent card were to flake out on me in the middle of this, I'm going to have to push it back up the hill, so to speak, and do it again. But I assure you it'll work. It worked 10 minutes before this. So I certainly hope it still works.
Well, Mark's pushing it back up the hill. I'm going to tell you why he said that. There's three guys in the car running up a hill. There's an engineer, project manager, and a software programmer. Brakes go out on the car, loses controls, flying down the hill. They finally manage to get it to stop. They're only halfway down and get out, and I say, we have to fix this. The project manager draws up a project plan. He says, we're going to identify the problem, we're going to take care of the problem, we're going to fix it, and then we're going to get home. The engineer says, hey, I got some tools. I got a Swiss Army knife. Let me break into this. I'll have the brakes working in no time, and we can make it home alive. The software engineer says, I really think we should push the car back up the hill and see if it does it again.
So that's what I mean if I have to push it back up the hill again. Okay, I've started a ping. The ping is going from here to the other interface on the other side of the wireless here. I suppose so that I'll have some credibility here. So it is, in fact, encrypted. Hold on. This is pinging. Okay.
You are. You don't have anything going to that screen.
That's really interesting. Anyways, hold on.
You need to turn on that screen.
Okay.
Turn on the screen.
Oh, yeah. I guess that would help. Yeah, it's so encrypted. It was service purple. It was. Really good VPN technology. Okay, the highlighted stuff there. The ESP, just encrypted IP payload for IPsec. Okay, so sorry about that. Okay. Grand finale.
Work.
3 minutes up. 3 minutes up.
What, 3 minutes up? I didn't start the attack.
No.
What the fuck? It's a bad day already. I'd like to make WaveSec work so that I can ask
them. All right. Well, we're kind of running out of time as far as the actual demo. If you're still interested, we'd be happy to demonstrate it in person.
It'll take me all like 45 seconds if I can make our VPN up.
Where's your personal website so we can slide?
Oh, let him know. It's funny.
It's on a summary. It's on the summary slide. 802.11ninja.net. There's nothing on that website if you go there right now.
Yeah.
But that's where everything will be. So if you are trying to secure a wireless network and you want to consider mitigation strategies, one option is a big guy with a stick going around looking for people with wireless cards. Not sure how useful that is, but it's an option. You can attempt to monitor the wireless network at a lower level where this type of activity is taking place, some type of IDS and performance management. And if you definitely want to use strong mutual authentication with a VPN solution so that you can mitigate the man-in-the-middle insertion. You also have the option, do some RF signal shaping, lower the power, put on your access points, and adjust the radiation patterns so that there's less signal leakage outside of your building.
Very much not on.
I'm sorry?
If you stay for like 2 more seconds. I haven't even gotten to my code yet, so that's not what's breaking.
So, thing to take home with you, wireless networks are more susceptible to active attacks than wired networks. It's actually more difficult to actually be in the wire from end to end. I'm sorry? Okay.
Yeah, essentially, and that's very not good.
The problem here is really that letting keys go by because of your monkey jack do a replace and substitution bidirectionally.
Yes. Okay. Essentially. I mean, like I said, if there's strong authentication, we can't do this. And if we can't make the machine come up, I can't do it either. It's really cool if I can actually make the tunnel work. Yeah, absolutely. If you do it out of band like you're supposed to, that's the point we're trying to make, and I really don't see people doing that. That's the problem.
I got a question. Let's say somebody, this person who's got more time on his hands than you do, polish the code. What kind of system, I guess the question I'm asking, is he going to be in a van outside the gate, or is he
going to
be walking around with a backpack?
How about an iPack? PDA?
I mean, one laptop, that's it.
It doesn't require, that's all I'm doing right here.
I mean, to actually exploit, I'm not talking about to get in the middle, I'm actually saying get in the middle and exploit ways. Not just in one ear and out the other, I mean actually gather and exploit the data.
Gather and exploit the data? As far as decrypting it and looking at it, or are you talking about
store it, send it somewhere else?
Store it, send it someplace else. A laptop is plenty.
A laptop is plenty. Laptop with a big hard
drive. Yeah.
Laptop, two wireless cards. All right, I think we're gonna end it there. Thank you very much.
Let's particularly give them a big round of applause, because I'm given to understand not only is this their first presentation, but they really kicked butt, don't you think?
Yeah. If anyone's actually staying around for DEF CON or something, you want to see this, because I wrote too much code to not let someone see this, I will be more than happy to later on, when I'm not taking someone else's time slice, to demonstrate it. But we just ran out of time, and the worst thing happened.